We're at the Western Illinois Museum in Macomb. The name of the exhibit is Homefront, Life During the Civil War. It opens February 11th and runs through May 26th.
This is divided into four sections?
Yes, the exhibit has four sections. We look at some agricultural history of the period. We also move into the interior, into the domestic sphere, and we look at some of the artifacts and what would have been used in the home at that time. Then we have in the back corner, we have a section on how Civil War is remembered. So when the soldiers come home, what do they do to commemorate those who have served? And then the other section is sort of the African-American experience in the community and the Underground Railroad and those the impact the war had on that community here.
The Underground Railroad, how difficult was that to research since it was secretive, it was breaking the law at the time? I mean, are you really able to find much information about that?
No, there are only two sources that I've been able to find in their recounts, and they actually contradict each other openly in their recollections. And one basically says, you know, he's got it all wrong because people still didn't, even after the war, didn't want to divulge people that were involved and the consequent or the situations. So yes, it was very hard, but we do have a nice first-person account. Like a grandson of someone who was involved, and you still get the flavor, and you still get the nature feeling of the hostility, and you get some of the names of the families at least that were involved.
Bob, what was your role in setting up this exhibit?
I came in and helped basically decipher the museum's extensive agricultural holdings to figure out what would best represent farming during the era. The centerpiece of which is the George Brown corn planter. Basically, McDonough County is still a very rural agricultural region, and life during the era was centered on agriculture. It's the number one occupation in the region, and we wanted to do our best to explain the changes that are going on with farming during the 1860s.
Which piece is the corn planter? Is it this big one on the floor here?
It is. It's the one in the center of the exhibit. It's kind of dominates the agricultural section as you walk in. It's an 1855 George Brown corn planter. It was built in Knox County, Illinois. And this is kind of a revolutionary device for farming in the Midwest. Prior to this, corn was planted by hand. You could plant about an acre a day. 10, 12 acres maximum for your field. A device like this, it's horse-drawn. It allows a farmer to plant up to 10 acres of corn a day. You could plant, you know, the size of your corn field is limited only by how much corn you can actually cultivate. Once it's planted, this is the birth of the corn hog economy that comes to dominate the Midwest even to this day.
How good of a condition is this piece in?
Personally, it's in phenomenal condition. You can still see some of the original paint in areas on the device. A few pieces are missing. A few pieces have been replaced. One of the seed hopper tops has been replaced. The tongue is no longer there. But for a piece of farm equipment that's, almost 160 years old, it's in phenomenal shape. It still actually, I believe, operates if you were to throw the handle.
I was going to ask you, have you taken this for a test spin in the field?
No, we haven't. That's something we won't try, and we would really hope that visitors do not try and throw the handle or anything like that. But it's in phenomenal shape, and this is my eyes really kind of popped when I saw this. This is the oldest extant example of this technology that I've actually been able to study and see personally.
So you want to take us to another part of the exhibit here, is it the indoor section, indoor home life during the Civil War?
Sure. There's one sort of popular song of the era called The Vacant Chair, and that's sort of a dominant theme in kind of looking at this area, this idea that they were trying to remember that their sons and husbands were gone. So we just take a look at life, everyday life. And like in the agricultural arena where things, technology allowed for more simple farming. In the home, there's also the same. We've got a great quick and easy wash machine here, and I think we would say quicker and easier than it was. Instead of buckets and paddles, you've got a a barrel that's kind of on two pins that you can rock back and forth. Also, a shift happens in the early 1850s from hearth cooking to stove cooking. So this is a wood-burning stove here. So these things actually allowed women to streamline some of their household tasks, which actually helped them when they were all of a sudden faced with the responsibility of taking care of the farm. And we have some examples of letters between husbands and wives. And you can hear in the tone of the husband sort of coaching the wife and, you know, could you, you know, go sell this or sell this animal and see if you can get such and such to come and help you chop the wood so you've got enough cooking fuel or heating for your home. So there's still this sort of management from afar, but the women did all of a sudden really take on more than a domestic sphere. They actually took on the whole home life.
How many of these items belong to the museum? How many are being loaned to you?
Most of the agricultural artifacts are ours from our collection, and we have a great collection. A lot of these interior items do belong to George Wanamaker. We have the washing machine in ours is ours. We have a great ironing board. We have some clothing, some period clothing that's on view as well. So it's a bit of a mix, like usual. We love to go into the community and pull in some of people's treasures as well.
And you mentioned a third section is post-Civil War, I guess right after the Civil War, people coming home from the conflict?
Right. The centerpiece of this area is a wall of honor, and we've listed all of the men who have served in Macomb. And it covers the entire wall, and we've gone through and marked those that were killed, wounded, and taken as prisoners. So it's overwhelming. You really get the sense that, yes, many, many people were taken from our community and did serve. Also, at the end caps of this space, we have two ways in which we remember. The first organization that comes out after the Civil War to honor the veterans is the GAR, the Grand Army of the Republic. And we're fortunate to have C.V. Chandler's medal from that organization. He was, as we know, gave us Chandler Park in 1879, but by 1899 he starts building a monument, and it was dedicated in August of that year. And the comrades from his the GAR unit here in town, the 103, get together and present him with a beautiful GAR medal. And it's not your typical GAR medal. It's gold, and it has his name on it, and it also has a flag ribbon, and those things were not the typical medal. So it was very loved by the comrades in the local GAR unit. We have some photos of their reunion, and we've got the medal on view. And another outgrowth of that is after you had to be a Union soldier to be in the GAR. So they realize that the organization is going to die. So they start with the sons of the Union veterans, and that organization actually still exists today. They were founded in 1881, and currently there are 6,000 members, and we have a uniform that's very similar to a Civil War uniform in the sort of sackcloth look, but it's not. The buttons really distinguish it as being from that organization.
Bob, what about this exhibit really stands out? We talked about the agricultural section there, but is there anything else here as a historian that really grabbed your attention?
Well, for me, the important message of the exhibit is that in some ways life continued at home during the war. Life was changed. There were approximately 2,800 men left McDonough County to serve in the Civil War out of a very small rural population. So the loss of manpower, the loss of husbands, sons, and brothers had a significant impact. But for me, when we talk about the Civil War, far too many people think of uniforms and guns and this 5-year conflict in battlefields. And we ignore the other aspects of life that are going on. We have agricultural change represented. We have domestic change represented. But as a whole, it shows what life was like and how people tried to deal with the experience of war here in Macomb and here in McDonough County. And I think that's one of the most important things to remember is that, you know, life did go on with adjustments, and we can't become overwhelmed in the story of the battlefield. The story of the Civil War era is the story of our entire country and everybody who lived here.
You could probably say that about just about any war where the men go off. Is there something about the Civil War that sets it apart from other such conflicts when we're talking about this sort of thing?
Well, it's an interesting question, and in some ways, in certain areas of the country, we see women starting to work in factories. We see women working in munitions plants, but that's on a limited scale in larger areas. One of the things, we have an image in the exhibit of a woman driving a hay rake. It's an advertisement from an 1865 agricultural journal, and it's one of the first images showing it's socially acceptable for women to do masculine labor on the farm. And that's a fairly big ideological change for the time period. Prior to then, we had what historians call basically these spheres of influence, and Sue had mentioned that a little bit when she described the exhibit. Outside the home was the world of the man. It was corrupt. It was dirty. It was where labor and work and interaction with money happened. And the domestic sphere for women was this ideology of maintaining the home, a purity for women, because they didn't leave the home. They raised children. They were responsible for their education. They were responsible for making sure their kids get to church. And really, like I said, a purity surrounded women in the home ideologically. And we start to see that blur a little bit for the first time during the Civil War.
I also think that, our position in the country, within our community, it's distinct in this war that you actually get both sides almost played out. And visually, even on our square, we've got, on one side, we've got Randolph, the staunch Republican, the Lincoln supporter. And on the west side, we've got the Democratic Campbell. And they both have, newspaper interests. And you almost see the battle lived out on our streets. And I think that is one unique thing about this war, that it actually, in some ways, is manifested, here.
Was this a split community during the Civil War, even though it's in Illinois? Were there some Southern sympathizers, many Southern sympathizers?
I would feel safe in saying there were, especially if you look at the settlement patterns where the original settlers came from McDonough County. Most of them came from what we would call the Upper South, Kentucky, Virginia, Tennessee, areas of that nature. This was a strongly Democratic community. Prior to and during the war, this area did not vote for Abraham Lincoln. Stephen Douglas carried the area. And if you look at the newspaper accounts of politics and life in this region, while neither of them have what we would term enlightened views of African Americans, the Democratic paper routinely stood against the Lincoln administration. It violently protested emancipation. There was a constant undercurrent of conflict in this community. This was a very divided community with some very staunch recognition of states' rights and the rights of the South to secede.
Is the Southern sympathy even reflected in the courthouse? Isn't that more of a courthouse square is more of a Southern tradition rather than something you would find in Northern cities?
I'm not sure about that. I think it still exists more in the South than it does in other communities where redevelopment and commerce has changed the ideology of town layouts, things of that nature. The courthouse square is a fairly strong Midwestern tradition still, but that also could lay to the roots of, even up into southeastern Iowa, we have a lot of Southern influence from the same region, so it could very well be the case.
Anything either of you wants to add about this exhibit?
I just want to add that we also, at the same time, on Saturday, we're opening an exhibit on oral histories of other vets. Influences of war and how these people come back and we remember them. So the museum has taken on an oral history project, and we have 11 interviews of vets from Vietnam and World War II. And we have MP3 players. People can sit down and listen to their experiences. So that will also be available on Saturday.
Is it just Saturday, or will that be available other times or throughout the exhibit?
Yes, it'll be up for a couple of months, but we want to celebrate those vets as well.
Can you talk a little bit more about the Oral History Project? You said you've got 11 veterans who've recorded, I guess, their thoughts on their service. Is that basically what they're doing?
Right. I mean, we kind of think about the experience of people as an artifact as well. So we collect, you know, hard and fact items, but these recollections and experiences, firsthand accounts, are very valuable. And so the museum thinks it's important that we do capture them and keep them. So at this point, we received a grant from SERV Illinois, and we went after and wanted to secure the veterans' memories. But we hope to, you know, build our collection in other areas of the community as well. So.
When can a vet come in to record?
Just give us a call. It's all volunteer-based. We have a program that we train volunteers to sit down and give a good interview, because it takes a little bit of skill, as you know, Rich. And then we can pair them up with a volunteer. So it's just give us a call. We'd be happy to sit down and take those oral histories.
You are satisfied with the progress on that project so far?
I think so. I mean, we've done 11 interviews since October, so that was quite an undertaking, and we're grateful to the volunteers that actually have helped. And they've ranged from high school to, you know, other vets, you know, interviewing them, and sometimes their teams, like a father and a son team, did a couple of vets. And I think they come away with not only a new understanding and experience of the veterans' dedication and history, but there's a bond. It's really interesting to watch them. There's a friendship that starts to build, and I think it's really wonderful. It's a good experience for everybody involved.
What's being done with these recordings?
Well, they'll stay. They're accessioned into our collection, and we have a hard drive, which we will keep them on. That's, I guess, the storage for that kind of an artifact. And we hope at some point to make them available on our website for research, you know, across, I guess, the World Wide Web, across the world, so people can tap into our resources here.